backgammon plus. We're ready whenever you are.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, the designs that are claimed in the two patents in suit here are claimed broadly, to put it mildly. Each patent claims a design associated with a gravity feed dispenser, a rack for holding and dispensing cans. And what the design, what the patents claim is some kind of solid surface area, sometimes called a label area, that's positioned somewhere over a can that's been dispensed from the rack and is lying on its side. And one of the patents, the 646, adds a stop at either end of the dispensed can. The board's determination that those broadly claimed designs are patentable raises two issues that go to the heart of the inquiry into design patent obviousness. The first, what constitutes a primary reference, the starting point for the obviousness inquiry in a design patent? And the second, how do you construe design patent claims when part of the claimed design is shown in broken lines? The case presents a third issue regarding the nexus that a patentee must show between asserted secondary considerations of non-obviousness and the supposedly novel features of a claimed invention. I can take each of those issues in turn or as the court prefers.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, and I'll ask your friend this too, because there's at least for me some confusion, and this is about the, what we call them dotted lines or the lines versus a straight line. Mm-hmm. Because the language at the MPP in our cases seem to suggest it can't be used, it's unclaimed subject matter if you have those dashed lines. On the other hand, it allows it to be used as some sort of boundary. And I guess I'm having a hard time differentiating between what the actual differentiation is in this case.
Sure. So what the broken lines can be used for is environmental context. That is, the broken lines teach the person reading the patent, teach the public, that the claimed design of a solid surface over a can lying on its side appears in the context of a gravity feed dispenser. But there's nothing about the gravity feed dispenser that's claimed. So if you look, for example, just at pages 10 or 11 of our opening brief. So page 10 has the figure of the 646 patent. Page 11 has the actual claimed subject matter of the 646 patent. If you look at the claimed subject matter, what you see shown in solid lines are the dimensions of a can, which we know is the dimensions of a Campbell soup can, not something unique that the patentee invented, with stops in front of it. And then there's some solid surface above it. We know it's solid because of the shading lines, but we don't know anything about the height, width, or overall shape of that surface.
So the board, where's the board's claim construction in its opinion? Can you identify that readily?
I can, Your Honor. Your Honor, I had it at my fingertips, and now
I'm sorry to take your time for that. I shouldn't take the time.
Okay, 67, Your Honor. Thank you. Okay. So the board construed. So again, if you look at page 67, the board's construction, and compare that with our page 11, which shows just the claimed subject matter. or page 10, which shows the entire drawing. The board used the broken lines to determine that, for example, the solid surface is taller than it is wide. It used the broken lines to determine that the solid surface is positioned a particular distance above the can lying on its side. It used the broken lines to determine that the solid surface is at roughly as wide as the can lying on its side.
But the broken lines don't change the design.
So the design, and we're now focusing on what's taught by that solid surface area, Your Honor, all we know is that there's a solid surface that includes what's shown there in shading. The entirety of that solid surface area could be wider than it is tall. It could be a circle. It could be a triangle. It could be an octagon. There are no boundaries defined around the solid surface, and we don't know how far it extends down towards the can because there's no bottom boundary.
You don't need to. The design patent is the design.
The design patent is what's claimed as the design, but you have to take out from what's claimed the broken lines.
It's the design, what's claimed, but for the broken lines, which are not included in the design, there it is. What is there to construe?
So the broken lines, and again, now focusing specifically on the solid surface, what is sometimes called the label area, all of the top, bottom, left, and right side are all shown in broken lines, which means that there's no claimed boundary. Contrast that with the can. So you can see a definition of the height and diameter of the can. Whereas for that solid surface, it can, according to the design as shown, it can extend in either direction. It can extend up, it can extend down, it can be a circle.
Can I see if I understand your argument?
Yes,
this is really a real question. It seems to me you're making two arguments with regard to what the board did. One is that they required, and forgetting primary reference or whatever, that there be a can shown. And you argue, no, you didn't need a can. Assuming we reject that and we think you do need a can, is there a second argument you're making, at least with respect to the claim construction, because we don't know what the board did, because they also relied on the dimensions and how this labeling all fits together, and there was error in how the board construed the impact of the dashed lines. So is that, I know you're arguing there's the can shouldn't do it for you, but assuming we reject that, do you still have an argument left with respect to the board's claim construction?
Yeah, so there's two different issues there, Your Honor. The question of whether a can has to be shown goes towards the issue of what constitutes a primary reference. Where the board got its claim construction wrong is it used the broken lines to infer some proportionality between the solid surface that's disposed over the can. So, for example, it used the broken lines to presume that the solid surface sits above the can at roughly the height of a can, but that's not claimed. So I'm not sure if that answers Your Honor's question. So the error in claim construction.
So where would that take you? If we disagree with you on the can stuff and we think the can needed to have been there, then aren't you left only with Sam, whatever that other reference
Samways,
is?
Samways, Your
Honor. Samways is the primary reference. Is that where it gets you? I'm not seeing how this dimension thing and proportionality, which I think I understand at least your argument on, where it gets you in this case.
So the proportionality, it probably helps to start with the primary reference because the proportionality issue, for example, has a little bit less to do with the Linz reference than with the Samways reference. One of the things the board said was, okay, well, Samways shows embodiments that have a can, but in Samways, the label area, the surface area, has different proportionality than what's claimed. So that's where the proportionality error in claim construction comes into play. So the issue with the broken lines, and then perhaps I can shift to the primary reference, is we have clear black letter law. Broken lines are not to be considered when you're construing the boundaries, the scope of the claim. It's in the MPEP, and both of these patents have an express disclaimer confirming that. So the public is on notice that what the public has been told is that the broken lines are there to show environmental context, to show that this is a design that's used in gravity feed dispensers, but you're not supposed to read the broken lines to define claim scope.
The word boundary is used frequently when board and when our cases have talked. So what's the difference? If it constitutes a boundary, then I don't know what the distinction is between being a boundary and being a claimed feature.
So as I understand it, Your Honor, again, looking, for example, at what we've shown on page 11, the claim design would have to include at least what's shown there as a surface area, but it's not limited to that. So as long as that part of the surface area is in there, it can extend to either side.
Yeah, I don't know if that's right. When I look at MPEP 1503.02, number 3, applicant may choose to define the bounds of a claim design with broken lines when the boundary does not exist in reality in the article embodying the design. It will be understood that the claim design extends to the boundary but does not include the boundary. So I haven't seen you argue, I haven't actually seen you raise any argument or case to the contrary of that.
So if you look at page 29 of our opening brief, Your Honor, where I think we're citing that same section, that it's unclaimed subject matter may be shown in broken lines for the purpose of illustrating the environment in which the article embodying the design is used. Unclaimed subject matter must be described as forming no part of the claim design or a specified embodiment thereof. And again, the use of broken lines indicates that the environmental structure depicted in broken lines forms no part of the design and is not to indicate the relevant importance of parts of the design.
You said page 29.
Page 29, Your Honor. Yes.
29 of your brief. I guess I'm still struggling with how on appendix page 66, what the board colored in blue, or what is colored in blue, at least in the portion that we have in front of us, isn't the claim design. You're saying that's not the claim design. The board got it wrong to the extent that they found that that was the claim design.
So not quite, Your Honor. So the blue does show what's claimed. I think what we show on page 11 of our brief more clearly separates out, more clearly takes the broken lines out of what's being shown so you can focus on just what's actually claimed. What's shown on page 11 reflects the blue that's shown on appendix 66. It just takes the broken lines out so you can focus specifically on what's claimed.
So are you telling us that the presence of the broken lines in the drawing invalidate the claim?
No, Your Honor. What we're saying is the broken lines are there to show environmental context. Again, the broken lines show that this solid surface over a can, that's a design that's used in the field of gravity feed dispensers.
The board says it's proper to ignore the broken lines.
To ignore the broken lines. So the broken lines provide environmental context. They show you where the design's been.
That's a good statement in the abstract. When you look at the picture, it shows where the broken lines are. Plus the board accepts the description that they form no part of the claim design. And where is that wrong?
So when you look at the board's actual construction on page 67, Your Honor.
That was the board's construction.
Right. The board's construction reads from the broken lines proportionality that's not actually reflected in the actual claimed design. So, for example, again, the board determined that the label area is taller than it is.
That's not an issue in validity, proportionality, is it? Are you saying that there are references which, if proportionality were changed, would be more relevant, would be invalidating?
So, Your Honor, the board considered that proportionality as a distinguishing feature in Samways, for example. The board decided that the proportionality of a Samways dispenser was different than how the board had construed the proportionality of the claim designs. So if you take proportionality out, and we argue that proportionality should not have been part of that claim construction, that the claim designs do not claim a particular relative width of label area to can, a particular relative height of label area to can, a particular shape of label area. If you take all of that out, then the board's distinguishing of Samways has to be reviewed.
But only if we take all that, only if we disregard the board's conclusion that a spatial relationship is part of the claim design.
For Samways, correct, Your Honor. So for Linz, the issue of Linz being a primary reference is whether a designer of ordinary skill who designs gravity feed dispensers would understand Linz to teach.
What support do you have for this idea that if you take away the broken lines and have to exclude them, that portion could go on forever in any particular direction?
Because
I just don't find any support in the MPEP or in any cases for that idea.
Because that's how the MPEP says to treat broken lines. So for example here, Your Honor, if the patentee had wanted to claim any kind of proportionality or dimensionality of the label area or claim a rectangle, for example, as a label area, they should have shown it in solid lines.
Well, that,
they chose
but,
not
no,
to.
But the MPEP section 1503.02, number 3, but you omitted from page 29, says the two most common use of broken lines are to disclose the environment related to the claim design and to define the bounds of the claim. Structure that is not part of the claim design but is considered necessary to show the environment in which the design is associated may also be written in draw may be represented in drawings by broken lines. This includes any portion of an article in which the design is embodied or applied to that's not considered part of the claim design. So I guess when I read that, I understand the broken lines can also define the bounds of the claim, that shaded part in between. It can define the boundaries of what that shaded part is.
So
am I misunderstanding that MPEP section? Because that's how the PTO understood its own MPEP section too. So how am I misunderstanding that MPEP
section? So the broken lines tell you that this isn't a gravity feed dispenser. We couldn't take that design and apply it to...
Yes, I know, but I think the broken lines in this context where you have a shaded region that's clearly part of the design provide the boundaries of the claimed area. And if I think that, then I think they've got the spatial relations right. And I think that that's a fair reading of that MPEP section that I just read. And given that it's their own MPEP and they think so too, I don't think you have me on this.
And I understand, Your Honor. So again, that's our take of what the MPEP says. It's a public notice requirement. The public looking at a claim design is going to look at it and understand the broken lines form no part of claim scope. So they're going to look at what's actually claimed in something other than broken lines, which is shown here in solid lines and in
shaded. But
there's
no dispute the shaded part is part of what's claimed. You don't dispute that.
The shaded lines?
The shaded part. The label part, the part where the label goes. You don't dispute that that is part of the claimed design.
Correct, because there are shading lines there to show some solid surface. We agree that there is a solid surface claim there, and you can tell it's a solid surface.
But your view of design patent is because the broken lines are there, you have no idea what the dimension, shape, or extent of that shaded part is. I mean, that would be a pretty kind of, that would create a pretty amorphous rule for design patents.
Actually, Your Honor, we think it creates a pretty bright line rule that we have. It just imposes on the patentee the burden of if they want their that label area to have some defined scope, show it in solid lines.
We're way beyond our time. We'll restore some rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Drew Toshoff. I represent Gammon Plus, the patent owner and appellee in this case. following what this discussion was going about, the scope of the design patent claim, it's pretty clear that appellants are confusing the law of design patents and utility patents. Design patent claims are not comprising claims. The definition of a design patent claim scope is that an ordinary observer will look at that design.
Well, but can I ask you, I guess going back to just the discussion we've been having for the last 10 minutes, in this instance, what would have been the difference? Dash lines have to have some difference than a straight line with no dashes. What would we be doing differently if your client had claimed straight unbroken lines versus the broken lines? So what is the significance of that for your invention?
My sense is that it's not a major difference in the design context because you're really defining the area. But there might be some quality to the boundary. Let's say the boundary was a convex or concave boundary or line. That might be something. And the other area where I think the dotted lines are used, if you look at the bottom of the can in that...
No, but I'm talking about this thing. We've had most of our discussion, not about the can, but about this display.
Well, it's an analogous situation because the lower bottom of the can itself is a cylindrical object, but it only exposes the part of the design, which is that sort of silhouette. Okay. And there's a dotted line around the stops and around the bottom of the can there. So... I guess that if you were to have
claimed.
A line, it would
that
suggest
dotted,
you were cutting it. Yeah.
That dotted line along the bottom is not part of your claim design.
No, it's not. No. It just means that shape, though, the shape of the can with that sort of cutout silhouette or appearance is the design.
I'm kind of confused. When you say the shape of the can is the design, your claim is to a dispenser. You don't claim the can, but are you claiming the can?
Yes, the can is part of the design.
So does that mean if it's empty, and if I sell it when it's empty, it's not infringing?
That's right. It doesn't infringe until you actually, well, it has to be contributory infringement probably because the rack is usually configured to
So the only infringement that goes here, if we were to move this design patent into an infringement case, would be Campbell sells it to this other person, but all the time empty.
Or uses it in a store to sell soup.
No, the only infringement happens when it gets to Kroger's or Giant or Safeway,
right,
and they take what's been sold by Campbell and the other person you've named in this.
There might be some other principles of infringement, almost all of the parts are supplied or something like that.
Well, if the basis for your getting this patent is the fact that there's a can there, that's what differentiates
that's correct.
It from
it's lines. A way of selling a Campbell soup can. That shape,
so the
shape
only
of
infringement
can.
Happens when the can is actually in the display thing.
That's right? Correct, when it's used in the display.
Can you go back to my question, though? I'm not sure I understood your answer, which is if what this patent had not used the dotted lines on the display and had just used straight lines, what would be the difference in impact for that patent as opposed to your patent, which has dotted lines?
I would say there would not be a big significant difference because, as a mathematician, I'm kind of used to thinking of these things. You can have a square, which is all the points inside of a square, and it will include the perimeter, which is really just a line of zero dimensions. And so I don't think that the perimeter line is so important. The real important thing is the subtended area. And I think it's incorrect. The one thing the council said about that is, if you were to extend this sign,
I don't know what that term means. Subtended area? I'm sorry.
Well, like enclosed. The enclosed area inside of this boundary. The boundary itself is not claimed, but the area inside of it is claimed.
If that's true, so you're saying the difference would be if you have non-dashed lines, you wouldn't be claiming you'd be claiming the lines as well as the interior. So the difference with the dashed lines means
it would be pretty similar, ultimately, in the
Well, I'm not looking for similarities. I see the similarities, but I'm looking for the differences.
I can't think of a situation where there would be an issue except, as I'm saying, if there were a quality to the boundary, which was a little bit more than just a line, like if it were like the outer edge going back instead of being an inward edge coming out, or there could be some slight differential.
Will you please look at A66, which is the board's opinion, and I assume you agree that the blue part is the claimed part? A66.
A66. Oops. Oh, yes. I mean, I have to get my... Sorry, so many copies. Yes.
That the blue part is the part the board says is the claim design, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I'd like you to look at Lintz, which is on page A697, and I'd like you to keep them right next to each other. A697 in the appendix. This is one of the potentially primary references. I mean, the one thing that baffles me about your briefs, by the way, is why you all don't put pictures of these things side by side. Because that's what's at issue here. And I mean, I understand why you might not want to, because then they might cause me to say, gosh, those things look similar, but I don't know why you guys
We did
to.
Somewhere.
But A697, figure one, am I right in understanding that that is the prior art that the board was looking at to ascertain whether it can be the right reference?
That's correct. That's the prior art reference.
So when I look at these two things side by side, I'm sort of baffled as to how they aren't exactly the same thing. If you don't have them, I'll share mine with you.
So this is
the claim.
Oh, okay.
And this is the prior art.
Yes.
And so, Polly, do you have it?
This is the claim.
So it's just for me, I'm sort of baffled. What exactly, given that all the dotted line stuff on page A66 isn't included, which includes the roller coaster looking way in which it extends back beyond the stops, None of that's included as part of the design.
That's correct. No, it's only the can and the
What the heck is the difference between A697 and A66? These aren't just substantially the same. They look exactly the same to me.
Well, the one thing is that the sign is narrower than the length of the can. The sign on our device is as wide as the rack, just almost as wide as the rack. And
I'm sorry, the sign is narrower than the length of the
in our
How rack. Do you know? There's no can in this one.
Pardon me?
How do you know the sign is narrow? How do you know about lints and whether it's wider or narrower than the can?
Well, that was the problem. There was no can defined for lints. In fact, it doesn't even say it. There's a can for it's a display for cans. The expert for Campbell's was the examiner who issued this patent, or one of the examiners who issued this patent, lints. And so we feel he had some contamination of his thinking. If you try to figure out how to do this, he actually conceded
whose thinking was contaminated? I don't understand.
The expert, the primary examiner on lints is James Gandy, and he was also the expert who interpreted it for as a prior art reference for the
grant. Okay.
The problem is that the device here is really just a fanciful device. They never figured out how to work it, and the size of the can or what it would look like in this device is not clear. We asked the expert.
What do you mean? What it would look like? That it would be right there at the bottom from a
utility perspective. Well, it would be a Red Bull can, but it would be in a different position. It wouldn't be as far forward. The actual distinctions here are there are quite a few, but one is that the sign is dimensions which are kind of analogous to the shape and height and width of the Campbell's soup can, which is lying sideways there. It's if you can see that this is a smaller sign. It's like not quite as tall. There's an aesthetic difference here. The can below it is farther forward than the can in links would be.
So you think that it can't be the primary reference at all? Can't even be the primary reference? Can't be the reference used in the obviousness analysis? Because the sign, despite the fact that I'm struggling to see any difference at all between these things, you're telling me that the height of this one is not quite as high as the other
one. I think you're being guided by looking at our patent first. If you look at this for the first time,
I'm going back and forth between the two.
What's that?
Yeah.
I don't think you would immediately assume that the can is going to be a Campbell's soup can, or where it would wind up. By the way, it's a somewhat.
So you're not claiming a Campbell's soup can. You're just claiming any kind of a can. It could be a soda can too, right?
No, actually, we're talking about the actual dimensions of this can.
Yeah.
And the associated height and location of the sign above it.
No, that's. I'm sorry, but that actually is not correct. That is completely not correct. I buy yams for Thanksgiving. I buy them in a really big can, big can of yams. This exact design could be, there's no scale given in a design patent. This design could be for those giant yam cans. It's just that everything would have to proportionally be equally sized.
Oh, no question, but there has to be a proportional.
This is not for Campbell's soup cans.
It's a tuna fish can. If it was a tuna fish can, it wouldn't come under this patent, right? I mean, assuming tuna fish cans are small.
Any cylindrical can would come under this patent.
If it was very narrow and you're standing a tuna fish can on its side, why wouldn't it come under this patent?
Because it doesn't look like this combination of things. See, the thing is, we're in the design patent world. Right. It has nothing to do with you.
But we don't have any dimensions for this, right? The only dimensions the board refers to is the relationship between this display thing. And you know I've got issues with this. The contours of this display thing, since it's unclaimed, and the can, right, or whatever it is, the object that's in there, right?
Right. Well, the thing is that the appearance of this can is in our picture is different from a tuna fish can or a Red Bull can or a Pringles potato chips can. In a utility context, you can squish sizes around
you
want.
So you're saying the Pringles can would be longer and skinnier, but my yam can looks exactly like this.
Sure. If it's the same shape, it doesn't have to be a Campbell's soup can, but I meant the dimensions of a Campbell's soup can, you know, the same, I don't know what it's like, is it 4.5 inches by 2.5?
Well, I don't know. The board, in its opinion, had a bunch of cans, and, you know, soup comes in different jumbo sizes here, and I thought some of the diagrams... Mm-hmm. The pictures, the photos the board had in its opinion were different sized cans.
There was there are the two Campbell soup cans that my client made for Rax4, and they're basically one is scaled up, but they have one that's condensed, and the other one is ready to serve.
But the thing that's confusing me is that the design patent claims it is for a display assembly, a display. Like that's the patent itself says, it doesn't say it's claiming cans. You're not claiming a can.
It's a gravity display
feed
of a
dispenser.
Can.
That's what you're claiming, a gravity feed dispenser. A dispenser doesn't necessarily include the objects which are being dispensed from it. So I'm just completely confused about how the can is part of your design. I mean, you're claiming a gravity feed dispenser, a dispenser. That's like when, okay, so suppose somebody covers, you know, we get a lot of these design patents on bottles, like say Fantastic or 409, one of these spray bottles. The shape of the design, they're not claiming the fluid inside the design. They're claiming the bottle. So I don't understand. You're claiming the dispenser. I don't know how. I don't know why.
Well,
the fact that Lintz doesn't show the can in its picture means it can't be a primary reference. It's clearly a dispenser for cans, just like yours. There's no other, no person of skill in any art could look at this thing and think it's for anything other than being a dispenser of cans. I don't understand.
Well, you could, I think.
All right, what else could they put in there?
The question is, what size can are you going to put in there? What's it going to look like? If it's a tuna fish can, it wouldn't look like ours.
But look at 827 of the board opinion. They're not looking at the regular size, what I would think. They've got what I would think of the Campbell's soup can on the left. And then you've got these very large cans that are the jumbo size on the other side. So, right? Isn't it contemplated to at least?
I think they're roughly scaled up, just a larger can, like 5x3, and
I don't
maybe
know.
The perspective.
It's got the label chunky. I think some of those come in bigger. So you think the cans have to be the size, a certain size?
Proportionally the same.
Do they have to be a certain size? Forget the.
No, not a certain size.
Oh, so you're saying it could be the can could be any size?
But the same proportions.
Proportions to what?
Height to. To same proportions of height to radius of the cylinder of the can.
Why? So, that's the can. It's not the display. You are claiming a display.
But we're claiming a display with a can in it. That's how we want to present this invention.
I guess I'm not clear on what the proportion. Are you talking about the display, the stuff that the board talked about how the display can only have a proportionate. Has to be proportionately close to the can.
Let's say you have like a 50-gallon drum. That's a roughly it looks like a Campbell's soup can. You could make a big rack, you know, huge with a big sign, which would be much larger than that, and it would come under this design because the proportions of the can and the stops and the sign, which would be immense.
So and it would cover any size of a can as long as the display stuff on top of it was. The width was equivalent to the can?
So all the relative proportions
are the same. I'm sorry, you're talking too fast. Is that a yes to my question?
I think yes.
But this is a question of infringement. The board wasn't deciding infringement. They were deciding patentability, validity of the design. I see that their opinion of obviously various points of scope were argued, but I must say I do have difficulty understanding how that relates to patentability of the design. There may be issues of scope that would arise in an infringement action, but did the board undertake to even to speculate? To
well, yes, Your Honor. The board figured out the scope of the claim and included the standard restrictions that you get from In re Owens, everything. You can claim an area within a boundary, and that claims the area within the boundary and that area has its shape and size and relative position and all those things which the board did consider and include in its analysis.
But as a matter of differences from the prior art or as a matter of venturing into issues that were not before the board?
Well, this is the problem here. If we started, this is nothing and here's our design. And we put Lintz in this continuum. Lintz comes in here, and the board said it doesn't come close enough because it doesn't have a a can at all, and you can't tell what size the can it would be. And the expert said, look, we don't know it's virtually impossible to tell what size this can is going to be. So you don't know what it would be if it's a Red Bull can or a tuna fish can inside.
When you say it's virtually impossible to decide what size the can is, that's not right because it has to function in the system.
Right, yes.
So it's maybe there can be some variation in can size, but it still has to work in the dispenser. You can't have a can that's twice as wide as the dispenser is. It wouldn't
work in it. And
so it's not
to fit in here. It has to fit between this bar going across here and
right.
this ledge underneath it.
Right. So your expert,
so narrow.
To the extent that your expert said you can't tell what the dimensions of the can could be.
No, it's Campbell's expert said that. Yes.
Or whoever's expert, that makes no sense. You can't say it. You can't tell. It has to be bounded to some extent by the structure of the device, but.
Well, you can tell that it should be about as wide as
a rack.
What
I was struggling with is I don't understand why, since you've claimed a dispenser, you have not claimed a can. I mean, I know you're saying we've claimed a can, but I'm just completely baffled by how you claimed a can, a design to a can within a dispenser. I just don't understand that. I mean, maybe I'm just, I mean, you know, we don't get that many design patent cases. Maybe I just don't understand design patent law. But
it's a very weird area.
Can I just, you said, and maybe you misspoke, but what I wrote down that you, one of your answers to Judge Newman was talking about your patent. You're saying we claim the area within the boundary. I am very confused about this claimed, unclaimed for dotted lines. But I think the board said, or I think someone has said, an unclaimed boundary forms no part of the claimed design. Is that a correct statement, that the unclaimed boundary forms no part of the claimed design? And if so, how can you be claiming an area?
Because you're talking about an area which is inside of that boundary. Let's say you have a picture on the wall, a frame around it. You say, I'm not claiming the frame. I'm not claiming the frame, I'm just claiming the picture. The same idea. It's actually a boundary is really, it's almost a mathematical concept, I think, is the odd thing. And, well.
All right. But we're way beyond our time, but you have a final thought.
I just want to alert the court to another decision on the SAS issue here, which came down, and that is that there's a case, Mylan Pharmaceuticals, 914 F3rd 1366, which held a waiver of the SAS defects in a decision.
Yeah, but why do you think they waived it? They raised it in the blue brief.
Well, in this case, they waited 6 months to raise it in oral argument, but
they raised it in the blue brief. They didn't wait six months.
Yeah, but the thing, well, the timeline is that this decision came down the end of March, I think, and then about April 24th was the SAS decision. They could have requested reconsideration by April 28th or maybe an after. Instead of doing that, they waited.
Is that what the Mylan case says, that if you don't ask for reconsideration, you just appeal it here, you've waived?
It says that if you wait 6 months, in this case, it's about 4.5 months, but there were so many actions taken inconsistent with referring it back to the board and really just creating a dilatory situation. They filed a notice of appeal, and during the period of the notice of appeal, they could have made a motion to remand, which has been granted in many cases. They didn't make a motion to remand. They waited until October, which is, you know, substantial time later.
Was that when the blue brief was filed?
That's when the appeal brief was filed. Yeah. So.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Well, he went way over, so we'll give you a few more minutes, only if you need it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll nevertheless try to keep it brief. Judge Moore, if you wanted to see the 646 patent and Lynn's side-by-side, that's on page 35 of our blue brief.
Oh, so you gave it to me after all.
We did, Your Honor. The illustration there shows how the can, how Lynn's would look.
Oh, yeah. I think the problem, though, is you didn't put it side-by-side with the PTOs. See, I am favorably disposed to you, not necessarily going to decide your way, but even when you put it side by side with what the PTO claimed, you only put it side by side with what you want us to accept as a changed claim construction. But for me, I'm struggling with, because, you know, I think the PTO's claim construction is just fine. So I don't have a problem with the spatial relations thing. So for me, I'm instead now looking at, but did they get it right when they refused to look at Lintz even with their claim construction.
Right. So in that case, Your Honor, if you could look at page 43 of our brief, we actually have there an overlay of Lin's over that same illustration we were looking at before with the claimed area shown in blue. Briefly, and again, I think this is a point, Judge Moore, that you were going over with counsel. Our experts certainly did not say it's almost impossible to tell what size can goes in there. We corrected that mischaracterization of the record at pages 14 to 16 of our reply brief.
What is this whole thing? What am I missing? How in the design patent for a display device does your showing the can become the art that gets you over the prior art? Lentz didn't show the can, you do. Well, Lentz clearly uses a can. It has to use a can. It's absurd to think there's no can being used in that display. But this isn't a patent, although I guess technically it's to what is in the picture, but the patent purports to be a display. How come that can makes all the difference? I'm just baffled. I don't understand design patent law. I'm just struggled with how the thing inside the product they're claiming is.
So we're with you on that, Your Honor. But so I think what is helpful here is to step back a bit, because I think where the board went wrong in this primary reference analysis is it applied an overly rigid, unduly narrow, and restrictive notion of that test, which is not what the test is for. So if you go back and you look at In re Rosen or In re Borden or the Jennings case, the point there, the reason that we have this primary reference test is that the court has found that what you can't do is find obviousness of a design patent based on selecting each design characteristic feature from a different piece of prior art and just assembling them to come up with an article that's similar to the design. So that's In re Borden, and it runs through up through MRC Innovations. But basically, this primary reference test, it's a common sense test. It's a tool against hindsight. So what the court said in cases like Rosen and Jennings is, look, you have to start with something. You have to have a fair starting point, a reference that's a fair starting point from which you decide whether the interchange of design characteristics is fair.
Yeah, like for me, I certainly don't think it's hindsight. Oh, we're gonna put a can in Lin's. Now I get it. Of course you're putting a can in Lin's. There's just no question there was always a can in Lin's.
Exactly, Your Honor. So that's certainly our point on Lin's, which is that a designer of ordinary skill would certainly understand Lin's to show a dispenser. Right.
That's the whole point of the thing.
Exactly, Your Honor. So, and Samways, similarly, I'll just touch on that and then I'll sit down. Samways, again, as a reference, when you read Samways as a whole, which we're required to do, Samways teaches dispensers.
So if the can doesn't do it for me, I mean, what about just the size of the label being slightly different? I mean, they're both curved. They're both right there. What about is there anything about the label?
Your Honor, the proportionality things that we take issue with in the claim construction really don't matter for Lin's, for the reasons that you're saying, that Lin's even has that same proportionality. So for Samways, I think I'd close on saying, again, you need to apply the primary reference test as a common sense test. It's a tool to help the court guard against violence.
Though, make a brief reply to the argument about SAS that your friend raised.
Sure. About SAS, Your Honor, this court held in the Google case as recently as March that a motion to remand is not the only way to get relief under SAS. We timely raised it in our appeal brief here. We were not required to seek reconsideration at the board level before doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank both sides. You're not going anywhere, I guess.
No, Your Honor. All right.